Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Chief Inspector Barnaby, right? You've got a bloody cheek.
Well, don't think you're going to get away with it. My woods, my timber. That's what the judge said.
Shall we start again, Mr. Harrington? We don't seem to be on the same track.
You're listening to Midsummer Murders Mayhem, the official podcast for the hit global television series Midsummer Murders. I'm your host, Nikki Chapman. In this podcast, I get to examine the Midsummer Murders television series in audio form, one nail-biting episode at a time. Spoiler alert, we leave no stone unturned, no evidence unchecked, no suspect unquestioned. So, if you haven't seen the episode in question, I suggest you do it right now. Now, in this episode, a woman is found dead in Setwell Wood, an apparent suicide, except that her suicide note is emailed after her body has already been sighted. With the help of cast, crew, and devoted superfans, I'll be covering some of the most important scenes, discussing the most intriguing characters, and seeing who can spot those cameos. Helping me on this episode will be Bill Young. Bill is Vice President of Television Programming for PBS in North Texas. Bill also writes passionately about British television and culture.
Enough about affairs. Let's go back to murder.
Coming up, we'll hear from our first DCI Barnaby.
What I like about Barnaby is that he's so ordinary. He's not far removed from the man in the street. He's a plod.
As well as Dan Hamby, who is in charge of overseeing tours of the Midsummer Murders locations.
We go to villages such as Dorchester and Thames and to Warborough. And these are locations where at least 10 to a dozen, maybe even more episodes of Midsummer have been shot.
Plus, we'll finish things off with a round of our superfan face-off quiz, hosted by award-winning Scottish comedian, actor, presenter and, most importantly, die-hard Midsummer Murders enthusiast, yes, is Ashley Story.
Question number 9. Finish this quote. Your parents were relieved when... blank, blank, blank. Maybe if I do it in the voice, hold on. Your parents were relieved when...
Yeah, that didn't help.
No.
Also, be sure to stick around for the end where we tie up any of those loose ends, wrap everything up, announce exactly who committed the murderous crimes and how Barnaby solved them. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Nikki. Always good to talk murder with you.
Love talk murder with you. And I love the fact that you are a professional when it comes to British TV and our culture, because sometimes it's quite difficult to unpick, isn't it?
It is difficult, but I find that once you dig into it, there's no place I would rather dig into.
Oh, you can dig into it with me any day of the week, Bill. So are we sitting comfortably? Shall we start with this episode?
I think so.
Okay. The title, A Worm in the Bud, is an unusual one. I don't know what it means, but we're going to start on the high with the synopsis. Now, the ancient Setwell Wood is in the village of Midsummer Worthy, and it holds a rich history of herbal remedies dating back to Henry VIII time, and it lies at the centre of a legal wrangle as the villagers tries to stop its owner, James Harrington, from felling it for financial gain.
Well, Nikki, leading this Save the Wood campaign is Simon Bartlett, who's a local farmer, and he's also a lifelong friend of James Harrington that you just mentioned. Now, both men once vied for the attention of Susan Bartlett, who married Simon, which is going to be just the prescription for something wrong going. But James's lingering affection for Susan led to the breakdown of his own marriage.
So the story unfolds with tension between the two families as childhood friends Victoria Bartlett and Hannah Harrington grow tired of their son's ongoing conflict. Causton Crown Court grants James permission to fell the wood, fueling, like the pun there, the animosity between him and Simon. Here's how it opens, and a few words from the judge.
But none of that alters the fact that the land belongs to Mr. Harrington.
As for this long list of objections, nothing warrants an injunction to prevent Mr. Harrington selling his wood or Whitley Estates felling it.
The tragedy strikes when Susan Bartlett's lifeless body is discovered in a pond within Setwell Wood. Now, this death was initially believed to be a suicide stemming from her inability to conceive. However, this is where the investigation takes a bit of a sinister turn, because it's revealed that her alleged suicide note was written after her death.
The suicide note was emailed at 9:48, so the suicide theory fits perfectly, except for the fact that Julie Fielding saw Susan Bartlett's body lying in Setwell Wood earlier that afternoon.
Now, obviously, suspicion escalates as an effigy made from flowers, of all things, from Victoria's garden, appears on her lawn.
I'm sorry about this, Mr. Barnaby. Somebody's foul idea of a joke. I know you have more important things, and the flowers will grow again.
I'm not saying there is a link with your daughter-in-law's death, Mrs. Bartlett, but I'd like to know why anyone would think of doing something so very odd. Is there anyone you would regard as being your enemy? Or someone your son would?
People often fall out with each other.
Your garden's never been vandalized before, has it?
No. And I don't believe anyone we know would respond to such a Susan's suicide by doing such a thing.
I'd be devastated if I came home and all my lovely flowers had had their heads cut off and it was spread all over the lawn. But moving on, the tension rises further when James is found drowned in slurry. For those of you that don't know what slurry is, it's not very nice. That's all I'm going to say. And it pongs a bit as well. As Barnaby investigates, it's discovered that both the victims were paralysed. Now, this is the key bit, using a sedative called valerian, historically known as Setwell. With those with the knowledge of the plant's presence in the woods raise Barnaby's suspicions. Jonah Bloxham, now he's a devout farmhand and friend of the Bartletts, and he's been there for years, makes an anonymous call to the police, accusing Simon of the murders and planting evidence on his car. Barnaby, though, is pretty quick on this. He's convinced of Bloxham's innocence when he himself is attacked. That's Bloxham, by the way, not Barnaby.
Well, and that'll do it, too, because if you're attacked, it's kind of hard to attack yourself and throw yourself down the stairs or whatever it might be. Well, as the truth emerges, it's revealed that Victoria murdered Susan due to her inability to produce a Bartlett heir for her son, Simon. Now, James was killed for knowing and attempting to blackmail her. Now, Bloxham had tried to protect Victoria, leading him to frame Simon, stay with me here, out of love for her, believing it would prevent him from selling the farm. However, this act ultimately shattered the trust between childhood friends, as you talked about earlier, Nikki. Now, in a final shocking act, Hannah Harrington confronts Victoria in the woods, and as you can imagine, it had fatal consequences.
Now, before we get into the cameos of this episode, let's talk a little bit about the key suspects and who could be responsible for the deaths. Starting off, now we've got Simon Bartlett. And as you've heard, he's leading the Save the Wood campaign and is the neighbouring farmer, but he's definitely got vengeance for wanting to kill James Harrington.
I'm sorry about Susan.
Are you?
Come on, Simon, of course I am.
She didn't care about you. She didn't give a stuff, but you never could take that.
What are you talking about?
You were trying to get her back and she still wouldn't listen. She still thought you were the same loser that you always were.
You're out of your mind.
Is that why you killed her? Because you begged her and she still wouldn't.
You're a maniac, Bartlett.
You are an animal!
Get lost!
I loved her! Do you even know what that means?
You will get what's coming to you. If the police don't get you, I will.
Da, da, da. That's a good clip, isn't it? That's a good clip.
I was waiting for the line, yeah, well, I may be a maniac, but you're an animal.
And also, I don't know whether you caught it there, Bill. Didn't give a stuff. That's a very British line. Do you know what that means?
I do. Actually, I've used that, and maybe I've picked it up over the years. It makes it to where you can say it in mixed company.
Yeah, I don't give a stuff. It means I don't give a damn. I don't give a stuff. Well, let's set a challenge. If you're listening to this in the UK, you do it anyway. But if you're listening overseas, Bill and I are going to set you a challenge. Somehow, over the next few days, get into your vocabulary, I didn't give a stuff. Just drop it in and see if anybody picks up on it. We're going to spread the stuff word. How does that sound?
It sounds good to me. And then right after that, if they know what you're talking about, you immediately have a friend that you can wax eloquently about British mysteries.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Well, then you have the death of Susan Bartlett. And we have Simon's mother, Victoria Bartlett. A lot of Bartletts here that could be suspects. Now, she had a vengeance towards her for not being able to produce an heir.
The Bartletts have farmed here for 500 years. You don't let that disappear. There's a debt to the future. For God's sake, Hannah, even your waster of a son could produce children.
Oh, God, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? And can you imagine owning a farm for 500 years? I mean, it's just, even for me, it's so hard to comprehend, because I think of my grandparents, what they used to do, and their parents, and then we sort of like, well, we lose it. We're not quite sure where the Chapmans sort of end up. But can you imagine having a farm in the same family's hands for 500 years? And Bill, I'm just going to add that that would always have gone down the male line. Real problem if you only had girls. But anyway, moving on, I'm going to keep with Victoria Bartlett. It emerges that she's also had it in for James, as he knew about the death of Susan.
Just tell me where the bitch is.
Really, Mr. Harrington, I won't have that.
Leave the sanctimonious claptrap. The police have cordoned off the wood. They won't let me on my own land. They won't say why. Where's the Sullivan woman?
I think she's gone. Gone to London.
I'll have her. Simon, all of you.
Well, don't forget, then, there's Victoria's best friend, Hannah, who we get to see at the end of the episode, and it all becomes just a little bit too much, and she shoots Victoria.
No further to run, Victoria.
You frightened me, Hannah.
You murdered my son. You killed Susan, too. I knew as soon as I heard the word Valerian. Poor Susan. Wasn't there an easier way to get rid of her? No. Despite everything, he wouldn't leave her. And finally, you knew there'd never be a Bartlett heir.
I have to think that this was pretty much the easy way to get rid of her when you think of all the other ways that we've been getting rid of people on Midsummer Murders.
We can't forget all these deaths, can we? But the pressure about producing an heir, and if you can't produce an heir, well, get out. Come on. You know, 500 years of family and all of that. But I also want to mention Jonah Bloxham. Now, he, of course, was in love with Victoria, but also knew how to use Valerian, otherwise known as Setwale.
She learned all about Valerian from him some 40 years before. But Bloxham was trying to incriminate Simon because Simon was about to break his mother's heart.
By selling the farm?
Yeah, the farm was everything to Bloxham, too. He grew up there. And Victoria, she was 5 years younger than him, but she was like a kid sister. Hannah said she idolised him and he loved her.
Do you know what? I've got a smile on my face every time we talk about how many deaths there are. Isn't that awful? It always just makes me smile. We're up to three. With each of the episodes, we also like to take a look at some of the famous actors who've appeared in them. How about this one, A Worm in the Bud? Who should we be looking out for?
Well, initially, James Harrington, who's played by Adam Cotts. And he appeared in, I believe it was the late 90s film, was Last King of Scotland. But people in the UK will definitely know him from Doctors, Holby City, The Bill, a lot of programs that have been on for a number of years and have rolled through a number of actors.
So true. Let's listen to a clip.
You're wasting your time here. And don't husbands usually top the list of suspects?
There's no one on the top of any list as yet, Mr. Harrington. Doesn't mean to say there won't be. I may not know a lot about farming, but I'm very used to separating the sheep from the goats.
There is one person that really stands out for me on this episode.
I bet I can guess, because one of my big favorites from early on, Wendy Craig, a CBE, no less. She played Victoria Bartlett. Now, a lot of folks might recognize her from the series The Royal. She was the matron on the TV series. But she was probably most famous for Not in Front of the Children, Mother Makes Three. But for me, one of my personal favorites, Butterflies with Jeffrey Palmer and a very young Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Yeah, that was just incredible. Just the most brilliant, brilliant series. And in a way, encapsulated sort of British life and this lovely housewife who was longing for a little bit more excitement in her life.
Well, the amazing thing is when you think about that series, and I believe it was Carla Lane that wrote it.
Yes.
Just how ahead of its time, and you just didn't deal with subjects like this, yeah. And especially in a situation comedy.
And was she ever going to have an affair or not?
Right. That was why you tuned in every week.
We better move back to the murders.
Yeah, that's right. Enough about affairs. Let's go back to murder and Wendy Craig.
Don't you have more important things to see to?
I don't know.
Susan's dead. If there's anything you can do to stop people believing her suicide was your fault, you should do it. I know you didn't have much time for her in life lately, but I'd like to think that in death you can do something more decent than rush off into the arms of your mistress.
Speaking of affairs, moving on, then we have Gillian Barge, which is Hannah Harrington, and she was actually the judge in Love Actually. And sadly passed away the year after this episode aired.
When we were kids, there was hardly a day we didn't meet, usually in the wood. There's the ruins of a cottage there. We didn't think anyone else knew of it. Of course, everybody did. It's even marked on the map.
Oh, it's hard for me to actually think of her as not the judge in Love Actually when I watch this episode. But I have one more that will be very familiar with for people here, Emily Joyce. And she was Bernadette Sullivan, who was the barrister that appeared throughout the show. And people here will know her from My Hero, Ardal O'Hanlon.
What is the decent period for abstaining from carnal knowledge of your mistress when your wife dies? If she'd walked out of here, you'd have thrown a party. It's the same woman.
It's not that simple.
Why not? Unless you killed her.
Of course I didn't kill her.
Well, you're a bit weak in the alibi department, darling.
A little more sinister than her My Hero character, where she's just married to an alien.
Oh, as you do. Easy. Any deaths in that show?
That's right. No.
No deaths. And I want to mention lovely Julia, the young girl who discovers the body with her brother and just doesn't leave it alone. She's like the future detective. Perhaps in about 15 years' time, you and I are going to be talking about Midsummer Murders, like the spin-off. And little Julie and Sean, her brother, will have their own series because full credit to them doing such a great job. She seemed to have a sixth sense, didn't she, the whole way through. Let's talk about the key themes, though. I mean, I started off saying Worm in the Bud. It's a much darker episode than so many of the others. Very few asides. I mean, Troy doesn't get all the great lines. I mean, normally when I'm watching, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat seeing what Troy's going to come up with. Because I think they give him just brilliant, brilliant dialogue. But on this one, not in it as much. And it has, well, quite a dark undertone to it. No jokey asides at all. I'm going to start with this.
They move in next week. Setwell Wood will be flattened in a fortnight.
Well, my dead body suits me.
Not the way, Simon.
There are those who prefer your body alive and kicking. Right, Miss Sullivan?
Get him. Oh, fisticuffs on the steps of the courthouse. So as soon as this episode gets underway, we know there's real conflict going on.
Do we know who she is?
Susan Bartlett, local farmer's wife. Same one. We met him yesterday. Throwing a punch outside court.
That's a positive idea, is it?
Yes. Mr. Fielding knows her.
He found the body?
Well, his dogs did. He was exercising the Midsummer Hunt pack. He's the kennel master.
I have to ask about the midterm hunt pack and ask what that is.
So in the countryside, not throughout the UK, but for centuries, we've had hunting, hunt packs. So a hunt pack would be the men and the women on the horses, and then the local dignitary or the master of the hounds would have the hounds. And the hounds would go out and hunt. Now, historically, they would go after a fox. And you would see this in the countryside. So, I mean, literally, you would hear this, and the horn would go, and you'd get a load of hounds racing across a field, any field. They'd got the scent of the fox. And then you'd get the locals who decided they wanted to hunt on their horses galloping behind the hounds. This has changed, as you can imagine, in recent years. And now when hunts go out, they follow a scent of a fox. They're not allowed to actually hunt the fox itself. But it's very much part of country life. It's something that I would never be part of, but it is quite a traditional thing, and they're talking about the hounds.
Ah, okay.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And it's time for us to be going into our archives and hearing from the very first DCI Barnaby, John Nettles. Born on October the 11th, 1943, he grew up in the small village of St Austell in Cornwall and attended the University of Southampton, where he studied history and philosophy. Nettles' acting career began in the 1970s, and he's known for his roles in The Live of Birds and the reimagined Poldark with Aidan Turner. But perhaps Nettles gained the most recognition for his starring role in the British detective drama series Bergerac. The show ran from 1981 to 1991 and followed the adventures of, and I'm going to call him a heartthrob detective sergeant, turned private detective Jim Bergerac. However, John Nettles perhaps is even more widely known as Detective Chief Inspector Tom Barnaby, playing this role from 1997 to 2011. But how was he cast in the first place?
Well, I'd already done Bergerac, but it was as far away from the world of Bergerac as could possibly be. Here was a guy who was a respectably married man. He had no hang-ups, no psychological difficulties of life. But he finds himself in a world full of extraordinary characters. Every one of the people he sees in the high street there is a potential murderer. And that's all. I thought that was fun.
With the show broadcast in over 200 countries and territories and translated into many, many languages, it was good news for John Nettles.
It's just great in French because the man voicing me, he had the most beautiful voice in the world. And he made Tom Barnaby sound like the most kind, loving man God ever put breath into.
Et sans aucun doute, pas le meilleur d'entre nous. Entre.
Oh, Bill, I don't know what they were saying, but it could be, can you wash the floor, please, in the kitchen? And I'm already in love. What is it about the French accent that works so well?
That's the way we feel about British accents.
Really? So,
actually, my Siri is a British female, just because it makes driving so much better.
Perhaps I should come out to the States. I might get more work.
I think you might.
But we've got to ask, haven't we, how does Barnaby manage to solve so many, many, many murders?
He works mostly methodically, legwork mostly, and occasionally by a hunch. But there's nothing particularly special about him. That's his quality.
And of course, Bill, Midsummer Murders is very well known amongst the fans of being quite sort of tongue-in-cheek, really. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
We play it very straight, but I think there's a very large comic element in there. We send up in the stereotypes that the whodunit on occasion, the actual form is being sent up.
So, putting the comedy to one side, what did John Nettles think of his actual character?
What I like about Barnaby is that he's so ordinary. He's not far removed from, you know, the man in the street. He's a plod.
Well, Nikki, I have to ask, what is a plod?
Do you know what a plod is? A policeman or woman. Yeah, a police person, a plod. Where it comes from, I don't know. But we say, oh, there's plod down the street, which means there's the police. It's quite a nice, it's not a derogatory term. It's quite a nice term. Yeah, so we can all use it. And he's right. He does come across as ordinary, but ordinary in a good way. And he's also incredibly likeable too. And we mentioned this a little bit earlier on. There are plenty of actors who feature in this show as well. Here's what he's got to say.
Which is what Midsummer Murders is for. It's for English character actors and straight actors to come along and show off what they can do. And it's a particular form of acting which you don't find in any other country. English character acting at its best.
One of the most, for me, important relationships on the show, apart from Barnaby and his wife, of course, is with his trusty sidekick, the detective sergeant, which for John Nettle's reign was Gavin Troy, played by Dan Scott, and later on, D.S. Ben Jones. But what did he think of those characters and how it worked?
It's a narrative device, basically. That's what it is. I mean, it's very good if you get two coppers together. They can talk about the case and thereby tell the audience what's going on.
Now, this is going to be fun for us, Bill. Let's touch upon the deaths, which, to be fair, John Nettle saw a lot of over his 14 years on the show. Difficult to answer, but which one was his favourite?
Oh, Nick, you're right. I'm looking forward to this answer because there were so many deaths, so many ways to murder somebody. Simple, difficult, odd, whatever it might be. I'd love to hear his favourite.
There was one which had to do with an extremely objectionable wine buff who met his end by being pinioned to his own lawn by croquet hoops and being smashed to death by bottles of his favourite Lafitte fired from a trebuchet. While his wife, who was confined to a wheelchair, directed operations from above. I thought that was the most witty thing in the world.
Now, sadly, the composer of Midsummer Murders, Jim Parker, passed away in July 2023. But to John, his crucial part in the show was imperative.
You know the famous story about the Jaws film? When they first saw it without the music, people thought, oh, what a load of rubbish. And when the music was added, oh, what a wonderful show it is. Yeah. And the same is true with Midsummer Murders sometimes, you know, that sometimes he has to do a lot of work.
As promised, we also pulled in the expertise of Dan Hanby, who is a consultant at Acorn TV, brilliant name, which distributes Midsummer Murders in the States. He also helps to oversee the UK tour experience. I started off by asking him where they actually visit on the tours.
We go to villages such as Dorchester-on-Thames and to Warborough, and these are locations where at least 10 to a dozen, maybe even more episodes of Midsummer have been shot. They've used different locations in the villages, everything from a cathedral to a hotel to the Six Bells pub, for instance, is a very popular place that's been used in many episodes. And we always stop in there and make sure that everyone has an opportunity to tour the pub and enjoy a pint. Any kind of place that gives you that experience in a chocolate box, I guess, type of setting that rings familiar to what people think of when they're here in the US and they're looking at these English villages.
This is really what gives Midsummer Murders some of its greatest appeal, the wonderful, wonderful scenery. But what about the people who live there? How do they respond to all these tours coming past their homes?
Many times we're running into locals when we're walking around and being guided, and people are warm and nice, and they see a small group of, you know, 20 or 25 people walking around. They're not quite sure what they're doing, but once we say what we're doing, they nod and they understand. We frequently have come upon a cricket field while a match is underway. And the fans of those watching the players have always been very friendly and kind. And people are always asking, what's going on? But it adds to the experience when we come upon a cricket game like that. And that happens frequently when we're in Warborough.
Now, it's a lot of knowledge to know all about the areas, Dan. How do you manage to keep abreast of it all?
We bring in a couple of Blue Badge tour guides who are experts in Midsummer. So that also adds to the experience, because these guides, in two of the cases, they've actually been extras in episodes. So they bring a personal experience to Midsummer's as well.
It's now time for the Midsummer Murder Superfan Face-Off Mega Quiz with me, Ashley Story. and I am joined with Bobby.
Hello.
Who is in Philadelphia. Hello, Bobby.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good, thanks.
Brilliant. And I've got Elijah, who is in Hertfordshire. Hello, Elijah.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Happy to be here.
Well, here in the quiz, we have no money, so we couldn't afford buzzers. So you have to make your own buzzer okay. noise. Elijah, what's your buzzer noise?
I think I'll just go for the classic beep noise. Go, mm.
Brilliant, brilliant. Bobby?
Buzzy bee. Bzz.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a quiz. And we are doing Worm in the Bud. Question number one. In the 2007 episode titled Midsummer Life, which household appliance caused a death?
Mm.
Oh, Elijah came in first there.
Was it a knife?
No, Elijah, it was not a knife. Bobby.
Was it a dryer?
Yes, Bobby. Bobby in there. It was a dryer.
Yeah.
Elijah, you're going to have to up your game.
Okay,
it was
my best.
A tumble dryer. Okay, I am not keen in saying this next phrase in front of a teenage boy. Along with gynecological advice... What else did Susan Bartlett use the internet to search for?
Well, I have no idea.
I'll give you a clue. Maybe she just wanted to, get like a feel for something. She wanted to...
What's the clue?
I'm not too sure.
It was a tarot card reading.
I've got to be honest. I forget the whole premise of this episode. I know one person's name in this episode and I just can't even think of the plot right now.
Yeah.
Next question. Super easy. Okay. Fingers on buzzers. Okay. What is the occupation of Joyce and Tom's daughter, Cully?
Bzz.
Yes, Bobby.
She's an actress.
Allegedly. Yes, she's an actress. Though I would never go to a play she's in because I'm pretty sure somebody gets murdered every time she gets a part. What is the historical name of valerian, the drug used to paralyze two of the murder victims?
Bzz.
Yes.
Is that well?
Yes, it is. Well done. And you said you couldn't remember anything to do with this episode, Bobby. Okay. Question five. What is the title of the book series written by Caroline Graham, which inspired the Midsummer Murders TV show?
Oh, no, I know it.
Bobby.
I'm just going to say the Inspector Barnaby Mysteries.
Close, but no coconut. Elijah, it's all for you. You could steal it.
I'm just going to say Murders of Midsummer County.
The answer was Chief Inspector Barnaby.
Oh.
Close.
Okay. Question number six. What is the name of Simon and Susan's farm?
No idea.
Oh my God.
The answer was Grange Farm. Question number seven. Who is the first ever murder victim in the Midsummer Murders television series?
Emily Simpson.
Yes, Bobby. It's Emily Simpson. That's some Midsummer knowledge there from Philadelphia. Question eight. What breed of dog do the children Julie and Sean see in the woods? Bobby.
Jack Russell.
It is a Jack Russell.
Oh my Lord.
The second cutest of all the dogs. The first cutest is the sausage dog. Question number nine. Finish this quote. Your parents were relieved when blank, blank, blank. Maybe if I do it in the voice, hold on. Your parents were relieved when.
Yeah, that didn't help.
No.
Didn't think it would, but
oh God.
Three words. You were born? I don't know. Three words. I don't know.
No. The correct answer is your parents were relieved when you discovered boys.
I do not remember this.
No,
oh my God.
Don't.
No, neither do I. Question number 10. This is your final question. Elijah, you can get on the board. You can
I'll
do
I'll
try
my best. Come on, come on.
Okay. Okay, Mary Bloxham, the ancient descendant of Jonah, was accused of being what?
A witch.
It was a witch. It was a witch.
Oh my God.
Elijah, you're a teenage boy. It's kind of cool that you don't know a lot about Midsummer Murders. We were excited to have you on anyway. You gave us an air of cool that we didn't have before. So, huzzah.
Yeah.
So the final score, Bobby has six. Ashley has four and Elijah has a cool as a cucumber, Neil Poit.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining me.
Okay, so let's wrap up A Worm in the Bud and hear the moment Barnaby and Troy work out that the murderess behind it all was Victoria Bartlett, whose jealousy and anger sent two people to their graves. Anger and jealousy, which ultimately led to Victoria's death as well.
Susan Bartlett had to be replaced.
By Bernadette Sullivan?
By any woman who could provide a grandchild. But Harrington worked it out. He put the flowers in Victoria's garden. Not to say you're next, just I know you did it.
But why would Bloxham frame Simon Bartlett?
He found out what she'd done. He wasn't part of it. Yes, she learned all about Valerian from him some 40 years before. But Bloxham was trying to incriminate Simon because Simon was about to break his mother's heart.
By selling the farm?
Yeah. The farm was everything to Bloxham, too. He grew up there. And Victoria, she was 5 years younger than him, but she was like a kid sister. Anna said she idolized him and he loved her. Couldn't stay kids forever. So he turned the only time he was happy into a private world. And he had to protect it. Mm. And even Simon was expendable. Victoria didn't see it like that.
In the next episode of Midsummer Murders Mayhem, Ashley and I are going to season 15 to showcase Death and the Divas. The murder of a journalist has chilling echoes of a 1960s horror film starring Midsummer's own Stella Harris. When Stella's more famous sister returns after a 40-year family rift, the killings escalate, each of them reminiscent of a movie plot. Is life and death imitating art? We're going to be talking to Rachel Glaister, Executive Vice President of Press and Marketing at All3 Media International. If you're watching Midsummer Murders around the world, then they're the people responsible for getting it to your screens.
There are very, very few shows in England, Britain rather, that make it to 24 seasons. It's an incredibly rare feat.
And of course, Ashley will round things off with the Superfan Quiz. Midsummer Murders Mayhem is presented by me, Nikki Chapman. A massive thank you to Bill Young and Ashley Story, and to our guests. This has been an All3 Media International production, with special thanks to associate producers Rachel Glaister and Gary Wolfe. This series was created by Story Hunter. The executive producer was Kirsty Hunter, produced by Shannon Delwish. The production team was Pam Muir, Ellie Abraham and Reham Musa.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.